ride the lightning, sucker? This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and we beat them up. And Chris, I'm so excited.
Really? That's a little surprising, but okay.
I'm so excited because we're finally watching one of my all-time faves. One of
really
the best movies. Never got a fair shake, I don't think. I think people didn't really, like, they made fun of it, but they never really watched it.
I feel like people were very, like, forgiving of this movie,
it's
actually.
1996's Kazam, starring Shaquille O'Neal. He's a tall genie, but he's friendly. He comes out of a boombox, and he's so good in this. And it, again, people never gave it a fair shake. For some reason, in the collective memory, it's become Sinbad. It was definitely Shaq, and it was definitely called Kazam.
Matt.
Yeah.
I have some bad news. I think you're a little bit confused.
About what? I don't have the Mandela effect thing. Because it was Kazam, and it starred Shaq.
No, Matt. We're not doing Kazam from 1997 today. We're doing Shazam from 2019.
No.
Yeah. I'm sorry, buddy. We're doing one of them DC movies.
Oh, no.
Yeah, if I could decide things, we would be watching a movie with Shaq in it. But unfortunately, I can't. And this is what we're here to do today.
We should do Kazam at some point, though.
We probably should, yeah. It does seem like a movie made for us.
Okay. Yes. Fine. We're doing 2019's American superhero film, Shazam. Starring There is kind of a genie in it. He's a wizard. This stars Zachary Levi.
Of the Star?
As the titular Shazam. Of the Star. That's right. That's what he's best known for, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, best known to me. Like, what else is there? That show about the guy who works at Best Buy? I never watched that.
He was in the show about the guy who works at Best Buy, which I do not remember the title of.
Yeah. But I saw him in The Star, which we should do that for Christmas, because it is wild. I saw that on Black Friday.
I feel like you talked about that movie. You talked about that movie at length on ApocryPals, though, so it's been covered. Chuck,
I mean, maybe.
I knew that show was a guy's name. It was called Chuck.
Trent. He was Trent on Trent.
Yeah, I kept wanting to call it like Jimmy. It's Chuck. And so Zachary Levi's in this. Mark Strong, who is typically good in everything, although I've heard some things about his portrayal of Dr. Savannah in this movie. He's in this. There's a number of kids who are playing the quote-unquote Shazam family.
Ooh, spoiler alert.
Who are going to be essentially the Geoff Johns versions of these characters, because this is based on the Geoff Johns Shazam comics.
Is it ever? See, here's the thing, Matt. Unlike our usual setup, I have kind of seen this movie and you have not. Yeah, because for one of our jobs, I had to go through it and pull clips for an article that was Things Only Adults Notice in Shazam. I had to do like clips to fill up an entire like 10 to 15 minute YouTube video. So I have watched this in bits and pieces, like forward and backwards, like skipping around to find stuff. And I will tell you, watching it that way, I hate it. I hate this film.
We'll see if things change from watching it in order. But two other things I want to point out about the cast of this movie and the director of this movie. Jaimin Hansu is in this movie as the wizard, who is also named Shazam.
Yes, the wizard Shazam. Which means, by the way, he is one of the few actors to get that clutch DC and Marvel role.
That's right. He's been in both.
Yeah.
One of
the Pursuer.
One of a mere handful. to be in both. And the director is a fellow by the name of David F. Sandberg, who is a Swedish filmmaker. The third item on his Wikipedia page is that his online alias is Pony Smasher. That's the online pseudonym under which he released several no-budget short horror films.
That's a weird name.
So his filmography does not have a ton on it. He released a bunch of short horror films. Then he had his feature debut in 2016 with a movie called Lights Out. Oh, and then he directed Annabelle Creation. So he came from, like, nothing but horror straight into Shazam, which is okay. Strange. Shazam was presented, right, as the lightest DC movie, right? It's been presented as the light, fun one.
Yeah, the one for kids.
Yeah.
When the trailers for this came out, everybody was like, oh, this looks like it's going to be the good DC movie. This one looks fun. This one looks like, you know, it's going to have like some comedy and some good stuff for the kids. And like a Cassandra of old, I told you all, it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad, everybody. I told you all. And then I never saw it in the theaters because Benito Cereno, who is a big Captain Marvel / Shazam fan, came home from watching it and said, yeah, it's pretty good. Chris, you specifically will hate this movie. And he was correct, as far as I can tell. But this, Matt, what I have seen in this movie is wild for the DC movie for kids. I mean, it's exactly the DC movie for kids if you following in the footsteps of, say, a Man of Steel. Like, if Man of Steel is for teens, then yes, this movie is for kids.
Well, the thing is, I saw a lot of very positive reaction to this movie after its release.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people had gone to see it and said, yeah, it actually is really good and really fun. And I enjoyed sort of the lighter tone of it. And that's what I saw. So to hear you say that it's bad is a bit surprising to me, although it's not that surprising to me.
I mean, it shouldn't be surprising to you that I have decided in advance, in the throes of my bitterness, that these DC movies are bad. But from what I've seen of it, I don't think it's as good as Aquaman, which...
Okay, and the high watermark is obviously Wonder Woman. Like, that's
Wonder Woman
the
is the best of all of them. And that movie still has that weird thing where David Thewlis is cast out of Mount Olympus with his dumb mustache.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like Wonder Woman is absolutely the highest of the high of these DC movies, though. So
yeah, and Aquaman would be good, except it's about 45 minutes too long. It's so long. It has, like, three unnecessary set pieces. And also Aquaman puts on a dead man's clothes for no reason. It's very weird. I'm curious, though, Matt. Like, I'm a big fan of the character, Shazam, a.k.a.
Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
The original Golden Age Captain Marvel, I guess we should say. Not Carol Danvers, who is now Captain Marvel. What is your history with the character, though? Like, were you a fan in the comics ever?
I came to Captain Marvel quite late. Because he's just a character I did not have a huge awareness of until he started showing up in, like, Kingdom Come and stuff. And by then, he wasn't really Captain Marvel anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to really get an appreciation of Captain Marvel, you had to be somebody like you, somebody like Benito, who went back and read very old Golden Age comics and had an appreciation for those. And I was not that person until well into adulthood, you know? So I don't have, like, a youth attachment to Captain Marvel / Shazam. I do appreciate those old stories for what they are, and I really like the sort of throwback nostalgia stuff that's still done with Shazam now. But we all have to acknowledge that he is a totally different character now.
Yes, very much so. One of the few comics that they had at the Sumter County Library in Sumter, South Carolina, where I grew up, one of the few books in the comic section that wasn't like a Garfield collection was the 1994 Power of Shazam graphic novel by Jerry Ordway, which was my introduction to the character, like when I was maybe 12. So that was how I was introduced to him. And I think that story would actually work really well as a movie because it's very pulpy. Like the first thing that happens is that Billy Batson's parents are murdered. But I think that as your introduction, and then that leads into the kind of throwback-ish Power of Shazam ongoing series that Jerry Ordway did. And I read that off and on when I was a kid, like when I could find issues of it. And those, I think, informed my take on the character. And they are very, not necessarily retro, but they're very like retro inspired. Like Fawcett City is very Art Deco, and it's very much an updating of what worked about Captain Marvel in the Golden Age in a way that I think people keep trying to do. They keep trying to update it. Like Jeff Smith tried to, the creator of Bone tried to do it in a book called Billy Batson and the Power of Shazam or the Magic of Shazam. Mike Kunkel, who created Hero Bear and the Kid, he did it. And all of these like attempts to kind of update it don't really work as well as this one. And I think part of it is because the DC universe of the 90s was allowed to have vastly different sections. Like, Starman and Power of Shazam seemed like they existed in the universe, but were very separate from, say, what was going on in Batman or what was going on in Superman at the time. Trying to incorporate Shazam into the New 52 DC universe, which is what this movie is based on, is, I think, fucked from Jump Street. Because that book starts with Billy Batson being a real asshole. And I think that's what we're getting here.
Yeah, he's a little shithead. And we're going to see how much of a shithead little Billy Batson is when we fire this thing up. But Chris, before we fire this thing up, and thank you for the background, the history lesson. I think that will inform a lot of what we see going into this. Mm-hmm. We got to do the hottest segment in podcasting.
Do we?
Snack situation time, baby.
That's right, baby. Snack situation!
What's your snack it on? Now, Chris, I'm going to reveal our recording time on this one. Mm-hmm. Because unlike War Rocket Ajax, which is typically recorded at the same time every week, Movie Fighters bounces around. We record Movie Fighters whenever we can manage to. Mm-hmm. And we're recording this at Sunday lunchtime. You got some lunch you're eating over there, Chris? You snacking on something else?
I had a pretty hearty breakfast, and I've just been chugging coffee for the past couple hours. But yesterday, Matt, I was looking around at some of the stuff I bought from the farmer's market because Aiden and I are going mostly vegetarian in August. We're going to try and eat vegetarian for a month, except on my birthday when we are going to a Brazilian steakhouse, which is the most meat you can eat at one sitting.
Hell yeah.
So we've been picking up a lot of vegetables from the farmer's market. I've been cooking a lot of like tomato-based dishes because tomatoes are in season right now and they're amazing. And last night, I roasted some tomatoes, some onions, some garlic, some peppers, and I made salsa for the first time. And it's pretty good. So I am going to be snacking on some salsa. I made enough where I could like have a bowl and basically eat it for dinner. And then I also have like a jar in the fridge that I jarred. So I am very much looking forward to it.
Partaking in the work of your own hands.
Yeah. The staff of life. What are you snacking on?
Doing the opposite, basically. Oh,
okay.
Every once in a while, I like to go down to the local seafood restaurant. That's a 10-minute drive from my house. Mm-hmm. And I get what my friend Ben Fowler lovingly refers to as a brown plate.
Okay.
That's just a big old plate of some kind of fried seafood with hush puppies and fries also. Usually I will get just a huge plate of... It's got different names in different places, but probably most commonly is known as baby shrimp. That is the shrimp with the tails removed.
Interesting.
And let me tell you, you can get a plate of baby shrimp. I can get four meals out of that. That one plate of baby shrimp that they consider at the seafood restaurant to be a single meal. Four meals. So this Friday night I went and because Marlene's out of town, she's doing improv training back in Chicago for a little while. And I immediately went to the seafood restaurant, got me a brown plate, and I've been munching on that for lunch for the past couple days. So I heated myself up some shrimp. I've got some hush puppies on the plate here, and I've been sneaking bites, if people may have heard it on the track already, because I don't want it to get cold. I've been sneaking bites of shrimp this entire time, because your boy loves shrimp, Chris.
I love that. First of all, I love a Marlene's out of town story. Because your wife leaves town, and this happens to me too. Like when Aiden goes on the occasional business trip, like it is time for Domino's Pizza here at the Last Refuge of a Coward.
Oh yeah,
here at Casa Sullivan Sims, and I love that. Like we immediately just turn into savages. I'm going to eat this fish plate for 3 days. I'm going to play this video game from start to finish.
Oh, yeah. That also is happening. I will talk about the video game I started and will probably finish during the time Marlene is gone on the next War Rocket Ajax.
Very exciting.
That's next situation. We're going to watch Shazam. It's available on all the places where you can get fairly new movies. Redbox. You can stream it on Amazon for a rental fee. X, Y, and Z. So if you want to watch along with us, that's the way to do it. But regardless of what you, the listeners, do, you're going to hear an ad and a musical interlude. And by that point, we'll have watched the movie. We're going to come back and talk about 2019's Shazam. And we are back from watching Shazam from 2019. It could have been a lot worse. I think our doom and gloom scenarios that we were talking about in the opening of the show did not fully come to pass.
I do have to admit that, like most movies, watching it in its intended order is better than watching it piece by piece and grabbing clips. And it's worth noting that we did watch this. I did the really cool move where you plug in a set of headphones and one person wears one ear and the other person wears the other. So we watched this along with my wife, who I believe quite liked it. Much more than I was expecting to like it. I don't think this is a great superhero movie, but I do think it's better than I thought it was going to be. And I feel like it's like a C+, B-. Like, because there actually is, like, a lot of really decent stuff in here. There's a couple of genuinely really funny gags. There's a lot of weird stuff regarding the universe that it's in, but taken as, like, a single piece, I think it holds up pretty well. And there's actually stuff I liked in here more than I like the equivalent version in the comics, which is really surprising to me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I feel like... We'll get more into this in our final thoughts, but as an adaptation of Captain Marvel, the character who has existed for 80 years, not amazing. As an adaptation specifically of Geoff Johns' Shazam from the New 52, way better than I would have expected.
Oh, a definite
Does that make sense?
On the source material. Yeah, that absolutely makes sense.
Like, compared to the Captain Marvel comics that Otto Binder and C.C. Beck made. You know, there's a lot to be desired, but considering that the only movie version of Shazam that we were going to get was this version, I think it did, it acquitted itself just fine.
Yeah. It does, spoiler warning for the end, it does have Mr. Mind as a tiny little green worm with a big radio on him.
What's weird is that it gets Mr. Mind, like, comics perfect, and gets Dr. They call him Savannah in the movie. I've always said Savannah.
That's because we're from the South.
I guess so.
Dr. Savannah, Georgia.
Dr. Savannah. But anyway, well, they get...
Dr. Savannah, fancy seeing you here.
Dr. Savannah is totally almost a movie creation, I feel like.
Yeah, because even in, like, the new 52 version of Dr. Savannah, he doesn't, like, I don't think he's got demons living in his eyeball. Because the deal with his eye in the comics is that he can see magic, which I thought right. was the dumbest thing in the world when I read it in the comics. But, like, here, his eye is, like, there's demons who live inside him. There's vapor demons.
He's demons. He's got a vape eye.
He has a rig in his that eye.
Is his
zero
eye.
Ohms.
It glows blue just like a vape rig, and vape comes out of it and becomes demons. But, like, he's not a scientist. We see him doing a study at one point, but it is, like, a sociological study about mass hysteria.
Yeah, and he's not even the scientist. He's the money behind it, as far as I know.
Yeah, he's... You said compared him to Lex Luthor, but he's, like, businessman Lex Luthor, not scientist Lex Luthor.
Mm-hmm. He even, like, kind of dresses like Clancy Brown Lex Luthor.
A little bit. He's like got Superman. He's got this very suave looking, like smoking jacket that he wears all the time. Vaping jacket.
He's got that cool collar on his. Like, I was gonna save this for high points, Matt. But favorite thing about this movie: everybody's wearing layers, and they all look very comfortable and stylish.
The costumes. We will discuss costumes in high points because it is. One of the best things about this movie.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go through the plot of this thing, of this 132-minute movie. The movie starts with an origin story for Dr. Savannah. He's riding in a car with his dad and his brother
he's
in 1974.
Yeah, he's a boy.
He's a boy. And his dad is John Glover. Who
three-time DC All-Star.
Who does not age between 1974 and 2019.
To be fair, he has essentially looked like that for the past 20 years.
That's true.
But John Glover, you may remember, of course, most prominently, he was Lionel Luthor on Smallville. But he was also Jason Woodruff, the Floronic Man in Batman and Robin, where he is great. He is maybe the single best performance in that movie. Him and Uma Thurman crush it in Batman and Robin.
I have often said John Glover, best head of hair in entertainment.
Beautiful.
Hands down.
Beautiful.
Great head of hair on that guy. So Dr. Savannah is playing with a magic eight ball. He's, you know, asking it questions. The thing keeps coming up. And instead of the responses that you normally get from Magic 8-Ball, he's seeing these weird symbols. These, like, hieroglyphs.
They look like hobo signs, and I'm pretty sure some of them are hobo signs.
And all of a sudden, his dad and his brother are gone. He's in the car, and he opens the door to find himself at the Rock of Eternity, where Shazam the Wizard has brought him to become his new champion, who is pure of heart. But Savannah, as you might expect, fails the test. He is wooed by the seven deadly sins, who are in statue form in the hall. And he is tempted by this floating orb, which represents, you know, the seven deadly sins and their deal. He fails the test. He is sent back into the car. Once he gets into the car again with his dad and his brother, he flips out. He loses his shit and starts banging on the windows, trying to get back to the Rock of Eternity. It's so bad, they almost hit a truck head on. Car spins out. It's kind of sitting in the middle of the road. Then they get T-boned by a car that's coming down the highway.
A truck.
And you think it's a truck? Okay.
Yeah.
You think his dad is going to die from this. Because his brother's like yelling at him, you did this, you did this.
Mm-hmm.
But then we see his dad later in the movie. His dad ends up being okay. But I guess he's badly hurt. And this is kind of the, you know, the origin story for Evil Savannah and his obsession with the Rock of Eternity and the power of Shazam.
Yeah, because he's going to be trying to get back there for the rest of his life, which makes sense. And again, that's a very, very different Dr. Savannah than what we have in the comics, which is fine. Like,
yeah.
I get that as his motivation. He does, like, the worst part about that for me is that he has a very cogent and relatable point, even though he is, like, the ruthless murdering bad guy of the movie. When he gets back to the Rock of Eternity, spoiler warning, he tells Shazam, he's like, hey, you brought me here when I was 10 and told me I'd never be good enough. That's super fucked up. And I'm like, yeah, Dr. Savannah, that's true.
Now, the thing that he is tempted by in the Rock of Eternity, I don't remember them ever calling it by name in the movie, but in like synopses of the movie and stuff about it, it's referred to as the Eye of Sin because it actually contains the seven deadly sins in it.
I don't believe that was ever called that in the movie, but it is a ball of light that's the size of a softball that then shoots into his head and becomes his right eye.
Right. And it, notably, it is not what the deal with his eye is in the comics. In the comics, the eye just enables him to see magic.
Yeah.
So, the Eye of Sin seems to be a movie creation, as far as I know. Anyway, opening credits, flash forward to present-day Philadelphia.
No, we don't flash forward to present-day Philadelphia, because we get the Billy origin there, don't we?
Oh, right. Well, it's present-ish day Philadelphia. I guess maybe, what, 7 or 8 years ago? Maybe.
Billy's supposed to be 14, almost 15. So this was, it's hard to tell. Like, he's, as a kid, he's like 4 or 5, I would say. Like, between 3 and 5.
We'll say approximately 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Billy and his mom are at a carnival. Billy's mom is
the Philadelphia Winter Carnival.
That's right. Billy's mom is throwing darts at balloons, as you do at the carnival. And she doesn't win the prize that Billy wants, which is a stuffed tiger. But she does win a keychain that is a compass. And Billy kind of complains that he wanted the tiger. And she says, oh, no, this is better. With this, you'll never be lost. And
you'll always
he's
be able to
like,
find your way home.
That's right. So he's looking at the keychain. Somebody bumps into him. He drops it. He goes running after it. He gets lost in a whole crowd of people. And he loses his mom. He picks up the keychain. He loses his mom. He finds a lady that he thinks is his mom. It's not her. And so he's taken to Lost and Found, where the police are trying to find his mom, but she never shows up. He gets passed around in all these different group homes, foster homes from this point on. When we catch up with him, by the time he is 14, he's in Philly. He's called the police to a pawn shop to try to get them their car there.
He traps them in the pawn shop.
Yes.
He lures them in and traps them in a cage.
And then he gets in the police car. He finds out the secret code to unlock the computer. I don't remember how.
I think the computer was just like regular unlocked. I thought he was putting in a license plate, but I have no idea why he would be putting in a license plate. I don't know. Maybe it was.
Well, he's trying to locate his mom.
Yeah.
And so he starts going through the database, the police database. Cause I guess phone books are not a reliable way to look up names anymore. I could buy that. Whitepages.com still does exist, Billy. But he's using a police database to try to look up his mom. He finds a lady with the last name Batson.
I had not even considered how weird it is that he goes into the police database instead of just, like, Googling her. But I guess they do say that he's done this with, like, 73 Batsons, right? So maybe he exhausted Google before, and this is his final attempt.
He checked every Batson on whitepages.com, and now he's going into police databases. So he finds another woman with the last name Batson. He writes down her address and runs off and tries to go find her. It's not his mom.
Yeah, he says, "Oh, I think you might be my mom." And then she opens up the door and she's black, which is a gag from the Dick Van Dyke Show. Which, to be fair, I only know that because I am old and was obsessed with television even older than I am. So
the cops do catch up with him, though, and they pass him off to his social worker, who gives us the whole rundown of he's been through all these different homes. The home he was in doesn't want him back. He's checked out all these different Batsons and hasn't been able to find his mother. So they got one last home that they're going to try to put him in. To see if he can make it. And this is kind of his last chance. So he's put in a home with this very lovely family. His new mom and dad are Victor and Rosa Vasquez, the two best actors and best characters in the movie.
Yeah, Victor is played by if you have watched The Walking Dead, he's the guy who lives. He lives with Kari Payton, the voice of Cyborg, who is King Ezekiel, who is a king with a pet tiger. Mr. Vasquez is his like sidekick guy, the big Samoan dude in armor from The Walking Dead.
His name, the actor's name is Cooper Andrews, who is of Samoan and Hungarian Jewish descent. The mom, Rosa Vasquez, is played by Marta Milans. They're both very good. They take him, Billy, to their house, which is essentially a mansion by city living standards.
It is beautiful. Watching it, and Aiden, every time there was a scene that took place in this house, Aiden and I were talking about like how much we liked it and what we would do to change it. Like, I think you could paint the foyer in a lighter color because it seems very dark in there. But I think that's also like it's very cozy. It has built-ins. It's got a stained glass window in the entrance hall. It's a beautiful home.
It has multiple stained glass windows. It's like a very it's cavernous and huge. Each kid has a room, essentially. I think they might share a room like two each, but there are six kids.
Billy and Freddy have their own room. Billy and Freddy share a room. Darla has her own room. And I think we can assume that Mary also has her own room because Mary's not going to be roomed with Pedro and or Eugene. So I would buy that.
So
the boys have
minimum 5-bedroom house.
Yeah.
It's huge and beautiful and easily would cost $1 million. If you were buying it in Philadelphia today.
This is beyond the scope of the movie, and like you don't have to explain everything in the movie. I am curious as to what Victor and Rosa do, like for a living. Also, Victor Vasquez is another alliterative name. The only person in this family who doesn't have an alliterative name is Eugene Choi, because it's Billy Batson, Freddie Freeman, Pedro Pena,
Darla Dudley,
Mary Bromfeld, but keep in mind she's actually Mary Marvel, and Vincent Vasquez. And so it's Eugene and Rosa who don't have alliterative names. And I wonder if that makes them feel left out.
I don't know. Well, it's never mentioned in the movie. Maybe in the sequel they'll get into it.
Again, beyond the scope, and that's fine. That is not a complaint. But
in the first scenes in the house, we learn all the stuff about every one of the kids in the house. Mary is very smart. She's 18. She's trying to get into college. Mm-hmm. Pedro is a thoughtful, quiet kind of kid. He works out a lot. He's into strength. He's on the bigger side. Eugene loves video games and computers and stuff.
Eugene loves video games, and the first thing we see is him, like, yelling at people while playing Fortnite, which immediately made me not like Eugene. Eugene seems to care a lot about ethics and game journalism.
He's exactly like Thor.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
Darla is extremely affectionate and loyal.
Yeah.
She's a sweetheart. And then Freddy is very, very much into superheroes. He's disabled. He walks with a crutch. He's a very fast talker. He's got a lot of dialogue in this movie. And he loves superheroes. He's got superhero memorabilia in his room. He's got a batarang, Superman. He's got a bullet that was shot at Superman and bounced off of him, et cetera, et cetera.
Which he says is worth $500 to $600, which again really makes me want to know where the Vasquez are getting this money. And did they buy that for him?
Maybe they're independently wealthy. Maybe they come from – maybe Victor is The Rock's cousin, and The Rock just, like, helps him out, you know?
Again, any I don't hoodles. Need to know any of this, but I am curious.
We cut back to Savannah, who is running this mass hysteria study. And essentially the study is all about these other people who have been tested by the wizard Shazam. And they're studying it as if they are all having the same hallucinations. When in fact, Savannah knows this is all real. All these people are being really tested. He just wants to figure out what the symbols they're seeing are, so he can draw them on a door and go back to the Rock of Eternity.
Yeah, and there's dozens of them. Cause we see, like, several being interviewed in the film, and then, like, we see his conspiracy board where he's got a bunch of others tacked up. And later in the movie, Savannah will talk about how no one ever believed him, but there are, like, dozens of people who had the same experience, and I feel like it would have been very interesting for, like, instead of having a corporation, instead of having this weird study, if Savannah had gathered up all of those people and, like, we got to see him interacting with them rather than like figuring out how they got there and, like, trying all the different things rather than doing this study where the scientist that he's working with is, like, the scientist he's funding thinks it's all mass hysteria. Like, she does not think it's real.
I mean, look, that's not how mass hysteria works. Mass hysteria is something that happens. It's a groupthink thing where you're all in the same space and people are led to believe the same untruth. These are all people clearly from different parts of the world because they have different accents. Mm-hmm. Who just each had this experience.
Yeah, we do get an Australian woman and a you're welcome. We are not doing the accent.
There's also, I believe the woman that they're interviewing at the beginning is meant to be Chinese or maybe from Hong Kong because she does speak English. But there's a part where she took a video and the symbols were showing up on her alarm clock.
Yeah, that's a really
that's
weird...
the key.
There's a really weird part where he's like, hey, did you see any of these symbols? And she goes, no. But I do have video, and the numbers on my clock were changing. And then she shows the video, and it's the symbols that are on the clock. And why did she say no? Like, why didn't she say, actually.
She probably just didn't remember them. I can buy that. Like, if you're in the middle of a really weird thing happening, you might not remember the exact shapes of the symbols that your clock numbers were turning into.
You're telling me she never watched that video back?
I mean, she probably did.
Yeah, if I was whisked off to a magic world and I had video of it, I would be showing it to everyone I knew, which is probably how I would have ended up in that study.
So she... either way, Savannah notices the symbols on the clock. That unlocks the last little bit he needs to draw on the door and go through to the Rock of Eternity. When he draws this on the door, the scientist that he's working it with, she's like, "This is, what are you doing? This is all BS. Obviously, this is just a mass hallucination." And then she touches the door and burns up and becomes a pile of ash on the ground. And that is the first of several moments in this movie where I imagine anyone who is like 4 or 5 years old who's watching this 15 years later will be like, "Oh yeah, I remember that moment from Shazam. That fucked me up."
Yeah, you referred to it while you're watching as the modern equivalent of that scene in Superman 3 where the lady gets turned into a computer.
Yeah, I mean, that's the moment
that terrifying.
It's not, but that's the one for me where, like, a movie I watched as a kid, looking back on it, it wasn't really supposed to be life-alteringly scary, but seeing it at the time that I did was that for me. For a lot of people, it's the Nazis melting at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of reminded me of that. It was like a person melting in Raiders of the Lost Ark. But Savannah goes through the door. He talks to the wizard briefly, but mainly he's there just to steal the Eye of Sin. He steals the Eye of Sin. He puts it in his head. The sins are released from their statues, and now Savannah is at his full strength. He goes back to Savannah Industries, where his dad is still the chairman of the board, and he takes over. He releases the sins. They kill everybody else on the board. One of them eats a dude's head. We see it. We see that dude's head just get eat up.
Yeah, that was when I took the Lord's name in vain, because that was surprising.
And he ends up forcing his dad to hand over the company to him. Which doesn't really come back in any meaningful way. He just takes over the company. It's just like we see Savannah do a big power grab.
Yeah, but it's less of a power grab and more of a mass murder, which I guess is why he's in jail at the end.
Fair enough. But his dad does offer him the company, and he takes it. Meanwhile, Billy is going to school at Fawcett Central High School. That's one of the Easter eggs you may have missed in Shazam.
It's a good one, Matt. The day job creeping on in.
He's talking to Freddy. He's kind of not making his way into the family. He doesn't believe that this is his real family. He's still trying to find his mom. We find out that he stole the batarang from Freddy's room. He's probably going to sell
it. The Superman bullet.
He took the batarang too, I think.
No, he doesn't steal the batarang because that's a plot point. It comes back later in the movie.
Okay. So he stole the bullet.
Yeah.
And Freddy's trying to convince him, like, this is your real family. This is X, Y, and Z. And long story short, when they get outside of school at the end of the day, Freddy nearly gets run over by these two bullies in a truck.
He gets clipped.
He gets clipped, and it's not a Ford truck. It's a dude truck. They've changed the letters on the front of the truck to say dude, D-O-O-D, instead of Ford. But he almost gets run over, and in the process, he kind of scrapes up the truck with his crutch. And the bullies just start beating the shit out of Freddy.
They lay into him. Which is like they knock him down and start kicking him while he's on the ground while people are watching them like stomp on this disabled kid, and everybody, including Freddy's foster siblings, are like, meh. Like,
well,
Mary's
kinda
there.
Like, "Hey, stop. Hey, quit it. Don't do that."
Yeah, Mary's there, and as we, like, Aiden pointed out, like, she's a hot senior. She could put a stop to this.
Let's be totally fair, though. They are in Philly. Yeah, this is not anything unusual. Not anything unusual to see in Philly.
Rough but town.
Billy gets his, as you called it, Chris, his save the cat moment, where he runs up and he stops the bullies from attacking Freddy. He makes them stop. And
well, he makes them stop.
They start chasing after him.
Again, you're going a little too fast, Matt, because he makes them stop by picking up Freddy's crutch and baseball batting a guy across the face and then, like, slamming it into another dude's nuts. And that is that's our first indication that Billy's go-to move is going to be the nut shot.
So the bullies start chasing after him, and he ducks into a subway station and jumps on a subway train, which I pointed out, that will never happen in the city of Philadelphia, where you'll just jump on a train. Never happen.
You had a lot of Philly-based commentary on this, yeah. On this film.
Anyway, he jumps on a train, and once he's on the train, that's when he gets summoned by the wizard Shazam to the Rock of Eternity. He gets the same spiel Dr. Savannah got. He's asked to be the champion, but he doesn't have the choice anymore. The Eye of Sin is gone because Savannah took it. So instead, Shazam's just like, hey, can you just touch my staff, say my name?
Yeah, at the beginning,
and then you'll
be
my champion.
Shazam, after he rejects Savannah, says he casts a magic spell and he says, bring me someone who's pure of heart, no matter how long it takes. And he says this immediately after the seven deadly sins are like, you're running out of time, old man. And I'm like, he really should have not tacked that on at the end of it.
Yeah, because we hear what the deal is at the Rock of Eternity several times, which there used to be seven wizards. Now he's the only one left. Because the last champion they created was Black Adam, not appearing in this film, who destroyed most of the Rock of Eternity and then left to, you know, gain power by his own devices, leaving behind only the wizard Shazam and you know, this one section of the Rock of Eternity. Yeah. So it's up to Billy to be the champion to kind of restore some dignity to this whole thing.
Which I think is also a missed opportunity because, like, I mean, Black Adam's from ancient Egypt. So there's like 4,000 years between Black Adam and Savannah getting brought there in 1974. And I feel like it would have been interesting as well to see, like, Savannah going, like, no, you don't understand. There's people talking about this for as long as we've had language.
And to the comics credit, the comics do that. Mm-hmm. Because the Savannah of the Geoff Johns comics is essentially an explorer. Mm-hmm. He's like exploring ancient tombs and pyramids and stuff, looking for this Rock of Eternity business. Like, that's where we first see him, is on an archaeological dig in Egypt.
Right.
But there's none of that here. After making fun of Shazam's name, what a great thing in a superhero movie. Billy says the name, becomes Shazam, learns all this stuff, and then is just kind of tossed back into the world in Shazam form. He goes back to the house. He taps on the window. He tells Freddy, hey, I'm Billy. This happened to me. I met a wizard. He made me into this. Billy doesn't believe him at first, but eventually comes around to it. And then we see the kind of long mid-movie sequence where Freddy and Billy are figuring out what his powers are, what his deal is, and what they can do with this. So we see them taking videos of the various powers that he's manifesting. We see them stopping a mugging where the woman getting mugged actually had the whole thing handled, which is a pretty great inversion of that.
It's a good, I also like it's
trope.
Actually pretty funny. Like the way Gary Frank draws the sort of beginning, like Billy, right after he transforms in the comics, it's like mega violent. Like, because I think Gary Frank has a relatively like realistic style, and so it looks bananas in the comics. But here, like, it's played much more for laughs as he like accidentally runs at the guy in super speed and accidentally like throws him around. And yeah, like it's a pretty good gag that the lady's like, yeah, it's fine.
She had already pepper sprayed him. They hear screaming, and it was actually the mugger who was screaming because he had been pepper sprayed. And she ends up saying, like, just leave me alone to Shazam, and gives them the money that she had.
She gives them $73 and is like, I never saw you guys, which is like it's not bad. It's a decent bit.
We see them walking around in the mall. Shazam is zapping stuff out of his fingers, charging people's phones. We see them in a convenience store because Billy's trying to buy beer because he looks like an adult now.
Yeah, it's all the stuff you've seen in the trailer, except the convenience store scene I also thought had some genuinely good bits, because when Billy gets shot, it's not just he goes, oh, I'm bulletproof, and then beats up the guys. Like, Freddie pulls out his phone and he's like, no, you got to shoot it again because I got to get this. Like, I have to get this on the certificate of authenticity. And like the dude,
okay,
by request, unload on him.
That's my least favorite thing in the whole movie. The handing the robbers their gun back and Freddie being like, shoot him again. Because Freddie and the clerk or the cashier at the convenience store are not acting like human beings. Because if those criminals realized that they couldn't shoot Shazam, right? What if they shot Freddy or the cashier? Like, shouldn't they still be scared for themselves? Just because Shazam is bulletproof doesn't mean they're bulletproof.
Yes.
He should at least be standing behind Shazam.
I feel like staging it a little bit differently, but it's like staged for the sake of the shot, you know?
It's trying to do a thing for the sake of the movie, but in doing so, people aren't acting like any rational human being would act in that situation.
I actually think, like, Shazam handing the guy his gun back is very funny. Like, it's a good bit.
It's another inversion of a trope, and this movie is all about inverting tropes, and that's fine.
Yes, say what you will about the rest of the movie, but I feel like Zachary Levi's Shazam, for all of the flaws that we'll get into later, is the opposite of every other superhero we've seen in the DC movies so far, up to and including Wonder Woman and Aquaman, in that he has a lot of, like, charm. One of the movie's big problems, I think, is that Billy is a lot more, like, mature as Billy. Like, he's like a weirdly bitter little kid, but when he's Shazam, he's like giddy and excited.
I think we'll get into that later in like high points, low points. I will say Shazam is the first DC superhero, with the exception of maybe Aquaman, who seems to be having fun being a superhero.
Yeah. Like, he does. I do like the way that Levi plays him as a kid in an adult's body. I think that's actually really, to his credit, he does a really good job with that. And I like the kind of, like one of my big things going into this movie was that all the stuff in the trailers made it seem like those comics, and again, like, I am biased from reading those comics, where Billy's a little asshole. And seeing Billy, like, actually be kind of excited and kind of like treat all the superhero stuff like it's not real, I think really works up to a certain point. I think the bad thing is this movie does the Spider-Man learning power and responsibility thing for 90 minutes. Like, it takes a long time for Billy to come around to being a hero. And this movie's 2 hours and 11 minutes long. And I feel like they could have cut out a significant portion of that and come away with Billy, like Billy, I almost said Billy the kid, like kid Billy, being a little more likable. Because Billy, I think, is weirdly, Billy's a very tragic figure in a way that I think is kind of interesting, but it's at odds with the way that Captain Marvel is played. Shazam the guy is played.
Yeah. And I think we'll get, again, we'll get into that disconnect a little more in a bit. But to continue with the story, long sequence of them figuring out what Shazam's powers are and what he can do as an adult. They try to go into a strip club. Billy gets talked out of all of his money, so they have to steal money from an ATM. There's a part where we find out, or Darla finds out that Billy is Shazam, and that is when he discovers that by saying Shazam, that's how he transforms back and forth. Because he's trying to explain to Darla what happened with the wizard. In doing so, he says the name, he transforms back into Billy. So Darla is the other kid in the foster home that knows that Billy is Shazam. But they swear her to secrecy because they know all the superhero tropes, and they know that people close to superheroes get hurt. Also, there's a whole thing through here, a running gag of them trying to come up with a name for superhero Billy. And some of those names are pretty funny.
Yeah, because the movie recognizes a thing that Jeff Johns and Gary Frank kind of hand-waved away in the comics, which is that he can't say his own name. In the comics, he's like, you have to say it with purpose, which is meaningless. But like that's why his name was originally Captain Marvel. Right. But then Captain Marvel Jr. couldn't say his own name, so it has been a problem since roughly 1943.
Anyway, the one that kind of sticks is Captain Sparkle Fingers. That's the one that's said numerous times.
He is one point referred to as Zaptain America, which I thought was really funny.
That's pretty funny. Red Cyclone is the name that seems to stick, like on the news and among people in the city.
Which is weird because he has lightning on his chest, but I guess you could kind of look at that and think it was a cyclone, too.
Sure.
Like, his name should be Red Lightning, or, I don't know, Captain Thunder. Like, that's a big one.
Eventually, Billy sort of starts to use his powers for personal gain. It's very much the Spider-Man becoming a wrestler thing. At one point, we see him on the steps of the Philadelphia Art Museum playing the Rocky theme on a Bluetooth speaker and shooting lightning into the air for money, for people to give him money. And he's singing along to the Rocky theme about how he's like shooting lightning. Fredding finds him and says, like, you're not using your powers responsibly. You're not doing what you should. You should be using your powers to help people. And Billy's like, look, I'm just, you know, doing whatever I do. Let me do my thing. And as he's shooting lightning up, he accidentally hits the tires on a bus that's going along a bridge. And the bus comes toppling off the side of the bridge. And Billy has to kind of like work himself up to be able to catch the bus and save the people. Mm-hmm. There's a gag where he just moves a mattress down that the bus could land on, which is a decent gag.
Yeah.
Then when he catches the bus, he can't put it down because there's a dog there. That's also not bad.
Those are both good gags, but I feel like a good chunk of this movie is the learning power and responsibility thing. But it's also like Billy spends a lot of time cleaning up his own messes.
Yes. Yes.
Like up until Savannah shows up, which is immediately after the bus thing.
Because of the bus rescue, he goes on the news. He's interviewed on the news. Then he gets into an argument with Freddy where Freddy's like, or I think at first Billy's like, you're just jealous of me. You want these powers and I got them. And Freddy's like, yeah, I'm jealous of you because I would use the powers right.
Yeah.
And you're not.
Which I think is a really good – I'm kind of talking myself into liking this movie more. But people are hearing this and No one's ever heard me change an opinion before, Matt. But like, Freddy's bit where he's like, yeah, of course I want your powers, is, I think, a very good bit for Freddy. Like, watching it, Aiden was making fun of us for being class clown kids who are always deflecting our real emotions. And like, Freddy gets super real with Billy in this scene. And he's like, yeah, like, the whole reason I'm obsessed with the superhero stuff is because I want people to like me. And that part, I think, is good. And I think it's the kind of, like, someone saying exactly the thing they're feeling speech that really only works if it's kids. Like, if it's a 14-year-old saying that. Because I feel like it is more believable. But I do like Freddy being like, yeah, I want the powers, you idiot. everybody would want to be bulletproof and fly.
And then in that moment, well, Freddy leaves first, but then almost immediately after that, Savannah shows up because he was watching the news, I guess. And he says, hey, you're the champion. You're the perfect man. Well, guess what? I'm going to take your powers. And they get into a big superhero brawl that leads them through the city, and then they end up fighting each other in the mall. And it only ends when Billy decides to kind of run away. So yeah. He says Shazam, he goes out of Shazam form, becomes Billy again, and then kind of loses himself in the crowd. But Savannah...
Two things about that scene. One, Billy nutshots Savannah. Like, just goes for the old, like, China in 1999, like WWF No Mercy, like right up in the balls area. The other thing is that they do like a really winky big gag, which is that when they're fighting in the mall, they're in a toy store, and Billy looks down and he realizes he's standing on the big piano key thing, and then Savannah's running at him, so it's like dum 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 dum, and it's like really, it's a little much, I think.
It's one of the many scenes in this movie where we see all the DC Comics merchandise that now exists. Somebody has bought some merchandising rights to Superman and Batman and Aquaman because merchandise is everywhere.
I think I figured part of that out.
Okay.
I feel like they definitely made deals with Aquaman and Superman. Like, Superman probably gave it to charity. Aquaman definitely cashed in those checks. The Batman merchandise, though. Because, again, this is the universe of, like, Suicide Squad and Batman v Superman. So I feel like the Batman stuff, it's off-model. Because all of the Batman toys that we see have the yellow oval around the bat, which is not what Batman looks like in this universe. So I think that's like a Bat Hero figure that somebody's like, I'm not even going to try and get the rights. I'm just going to make a similar to but legally distinct. It's like those packs of action figures that have like a Power Ranger and Spider-Man and Shrek.
But it's Batman. Right. It's like Robert Cop.
Yeah. It's Bat Hero. That's some Bat Hero merchandise.
Flying Mouse Fellow. So, anyway, Billy eventually gets away, but Savannah notices on TV in the mall a shot of Shazam and Freddy fighting, which, what is it with the Philly News Channel of, like, this is the footage they're going to show of Shazam arguing with a child?
I really wish, because like the Chiron on there is like, you know, Philadelphia Hero Saves Bus or something. And I really wish it was like Philadelphia Hero Yells at Child. Philly's Hero.
Savannah puts it together.
Captain Gritty.
That Shazam knows this kid who's calling for Billy in the mall and is gonna, like, he eventually finds their house. But before that happens, we see, like, Billy go back home, and he's kind of sorry. He's decided he can't be Shazam anymore. But the other kids have figured out that he's Shazam. They see it on the news. Mary figures it all out. She puts it all together. And so they confront Billy about, like, hey, you're this new superhero. Billy says, I'm not anymore. I'm no good at it. And then they say, we found your birth mom. She lives two blocks away. Because here's the thing about Eugene. He played the game Watch Dogs.
for PlayStation.
And because he played the game Watch Dogs, he can hack adoption records, I guess. Or birth records, I guess. I'm not sure what exactly he hacked to find Billy's mom, but he found her.
I think it's the police records, because he mentions Billy's – is this an Easter egg you might have missed? His parents are Cece and Marilyn Batson, which was their names in Power of Shazam, the Jerry Ordway book.
Yeah, that's a small detail you might have missed.
Yeah, and of course Cece Beck, the primary – not the co-creator, but the artist – if you think of Shazam, you're thinking of a Cece Beck drawing. He talks about how Cece Batson has been in prison in Florida for 10 years, which is a little weird, I think. That's like a weird detail. So I guess he's going into the police records like Billy was trying to do at the beginning. He just managed to get the right one.
Yeah, because Watch Dogs taught him so well.
Watch Dogs taught him. And also they find his notebook where he has all of the, like, wrong answers.
Yeah. So he goes and visits his mom, and his mom barely remembers him. She's purposely left him behind at the carnival.
Yeah.
Because she was standing, like, 10 feet away from him at one point. If he had looked up and slightly to the left, he would have seen her.
Yeah.
But
she watches
he was looking
a cop
down.
Give him a blanket and a hot cocoa, and then she's like, "He'll be better off," and she bails. And the thing she says is she was 17, and I don't know if she means she was like 17 when she got pregnant, or if she was 17. When
I think
Billy
that's what she
four.
Means. I think she means she was 17 when she had Billy.
Okay, so she talks about how her parents kicked her out, and which. Did she then go back to her parents and they were like, hey, what happened to that baby you had? And she was like, don't worry about it.
So, well, I mean,
the cops gave him a blanket and a hot cocoa. He's fine.
At this point, 9 or 10 years later, she's living with some other guy.
Oh,
she
she's
doesn't
clearly
want...
in an abusive relationship because, like, the Travis is yelling at her.
She doesn't want Travis to know her son is there. And Billy kind of realizes in this whole moment that the family, the Vasquezes and his Marvel siblings are his real family, not this lady.
Mm.
Because at one point he hands her the compass keychain and she goes, what's this? Which I think is one of the most like poignant moments in the whole movie.
She doesn't
even recognize the thing.
It's really grim.
Instead of
families that we see in this film, the Savannahs and Marilyn Batson are like terrible. Which
yeah, they're not good.
I'll talk about that in a minute, but go on.
Like instead of Uncle Ben dying, Billy just realizes that his mom doesn't really care about him, which is tough. But it makes him embrace his foster family, finally, as his own family. He goes back to the house, and Savannah is there, and he's holding the rest of the family captive. There's a little bit of a negotiation, but eventually they all get teleported back to the Rock of Eternity, where Billy is supposed to hand over his powers. That doesn't happen. Instead, they escape from the Rock of Eternity and end up back at the Philadelphia Winter Carnival. At the Philadelphia Winter Carnival, Billy, as Shazam, tries to handle all of the seven deadly sins except envy and Savannah all at once. And it's just too much for him to handle. He's about to get drowned in this very dangerous thing at the carnival where there's like this floor made out of ice and it's real ice and there's water under there?
Yeah, it's like it's
that
like
is not up to code.
It's like a skating rink, but they just took like an above ground pool and filled it up and waited for it to get cold.
Pretty much. Yeah. Long story short, Billy ends up not giving the power to Savannah, even though it looks like he's going to at one point. He ends up sharing the power with the rest of his siblings, and they become the Marvel family at that point.
Or Shazam family, as they're known now.
Yeah, the Shazam family. Everybody, all the kids are now portrayed by different actors, even though Mary Marvel is basically the same age as Mary Bromfield. I feel like that should have been the same actress, but neither here nor there.
Yeah, and this is a thing that happened in the comics too. This is a pure Geoff Johns invention, because it comes up during Flashpoint that Billy has, you know, these foster siblings, and they all split up the Shazam powers like the Infinity Man, and I hate it in the comics, and I can't figure out why. It might just be because I don't like Flashpoint. I don't like the New 52 Shazam. But I've also talked to Benito, who's a big Captain Marvel guy, and I feel like John Morris, who is also a big Captain Marvel guy, feel the same. Even though that is how, like, Golden Age Mary Marvel, Golden Age Captain Marvel Jr., and even, like, the Lieutenant Marvels, who are all... If you don't know this, in the Golden Age, there were three other dudes named Billy Batson who accidentally said Shazam, and the magic doesn't know which Billy Batson it is, so it just gives them all powers, leading to Hillbilly Batson, who is the Appalachian Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Love Hillbilly Batson. But, like, I like all that stuff. I like Captain Marvel Jr. I like Mary Marvel. I can't figure out why I don't like the color-coded Shazam family of the modern day, and they've been compared to like a Super Sentai team, which again is something that I really like. But I will say, as much as I kind of am reflexively turned off by it in the comics, I do think it's done really well here. They're very engaging and likable, and also nobody looks at Dr. Manhattan's dick.
I think they have more to do is what it boils down to. Because they each get to fight the various sins, right?
Mm-hmm.
They all have an opportunity to do something. They all have an opportunity to save people at the carnival. They all have distinct personalities, which I don't really feel like we get a ton of in the comics.
And maybe we do now, because we're getting that current Shazam series that's more focused on there being like the seven different kingdoms of magic that are connected to the Rock of Eternity, and the fact that exclamation point is a person. Like, you know how Shazam has an exclamation point in it? That's a person.
Right.
So there's a secret seventh Shazam out there. Wild.
But, like, I feel like, it, especially in that first, like, the Justice League backups Shazam story, none of these kids really got a moment to shine. They were just a bunch of characters to be the thing,
mm-hmm.
right? To be the other members of the family. And here, they all get to do something.
Yeah.
You know?
And I feel like Geoff Johns, as a writer, is not great at writing children. Like, and a lot of people, like, honestly, because everybody writing comics is like an old dude, or like an old person, a lot of people struggle with writing believable children who aren't like, who aren't just there to like, you know, spout plot details. And even teenagers, like there are very few people who I think are good at writing believable teenagers. Like Teenie is one, like her Magdalena series, I think did a really good job with teens. But that shortcoming of the comics creator, I think, makes them come off worse than they do in this movie, where honestly, like, all of the actors are good at playing the parts. Also, Pedro's arms are insane. They're like sick.
Okay, we've talked about the plot for way too long, so let's get through the end of it. Shazam and Savannah fight some more. There's a good gag where Savannah is way far away from Shazam giving his big villain speech, and Shazam can't hear him.
Yeah, best gag in the movie.
That might be best gag in the movie. Shazam ends up coaxing Envy, who is the last of the sins, out of Savannah to kind of make depower him. All the sins get defeated. Savannah gets defeated. Savannah almost falls off a roof to his death, but Shazam saves him, which is one of my favorite details in the movie. I like it when the bad guy doesn't die. Mm-hmm. And then Day is saved. People know about this superhero family that's in Philadelphia. There's a news report that wraps things up. The Santa who was on fire earlier in the movie runs up into the news report, starts cussing.
Yeah.
That, which might be the most Philly thing in the whole movie. Post-credit scene, Mr. Mind shows up to talk to Savannah in prison. And then there's a gag about Aquaman. The end. Chris, what do we have for high points of Shazam?
I honestly really like the superhero costumes in this movie.
Yes. Number one, with a bullet, costumes.
Yeah. Even when, like, the Shazam family shows up, they're... It's weird that, like, all of the boys' costumes are essentially the same suit, but Darla and Mary both have, like, variations on it. Like, Mary looks exactly like Mary Marvel. Like, she's wearing, you know, the short sleeve top and the skirt. Darla has, like, a... They both look like figure skaters, you know? But I actually really like how they look. I think it's... I feel like the design of Shazam that this is based on, with, like, the glowing lightning bolt and everything, is unnecessary. I think Captain Marvel has one of the all-time greatest costume designs. Like, it's such a good suit, because it looks like a... Like, it looks like a suit, you know? Like, it has... Like his boots have stitching on them in 1940, but I feel like the translation to this, I think it's the best looking suit in the DC movies. Like Aquaman gets his Aquaman clothes at the end of Aquaman, and that looks pretty good. Wonder Woman looks pretty decent when she's in her own movie and not like in the world of shadow that exists in Batman v Superman. But I think this one really works well. Also, he never wears that hood. Even though the cape has the hood, I hate the hood, and he never wears it. So
he wears it one time. He wears it one time, right after he becomes Shazam, when he's tapping on the window.
You know, it is weirdly comparable to, like the screen adaptation of the Shazam suit is very comparable to the screen adaptation of the Captain Marvel suit, like the Carol Danvers Captain Marvel suit, whereas in the comics, it's got the sash. It's got, like, gloves that are obviously gloves. And in the movie, it's very much like a movie costume that is, you know, her alien military uniform. I feel like the evolution of the dueling Captain Marvel suits is weirdly parallel.
And Dr. Savannah, despite not looking like comics Savannah, looks good.
Like, actually,
he's got a good look to him.
I actually liked Mark Strong in the part, and especially at the end when he's doing the villain speech gag, because he's willing to, like, he's willing to be the serious one, playing everything perfectly straight and serious and having the silly stuff happen around him, which I appreciate. I think it's a not necessarily bad version of Savannah, the character, but I would have much preferred a weird little gremlin. like comic Savannah showing up, you know, instead of like handsome, like strong Savannah. But if Shazam's going to fight Lex Luthor, this is a perfectly acceptable way to do it.
Other high points, I think, include like Mr. Mind being full on Mr. Mind when he shows mm-hmm. up. The movie has a handful of really, really solid gags. Most of its attempts to kind of upend superhero tropes or turn them on their head are fairly well observed.
It's not bad. I feel like
I think there are a handful of story beats that are that have an emotional weight to them. We talked about the argument between Freddy and Billy about Freddy wanting to have gotten the powers. And I think the thing where Billy meets his mom, even though it happens 90 minutes into the movie, maybe way too far into it. It's a different kind of way to do that turnaround than just like having a member of the family die. Oh, and Savannah doesn't die. Bad guy doesn't die. Yeah.
I think it is crucial to note that this movie is not poorly written. Suicide Squad was very poorly written. Man of Steel, Batman v Superman. Those are poorly written films. The stuff that I don't like in this film is not poor writing. It's approach. And I think generally speaking, the writing is good. I think that is definitely a distinction between this movie and other films in this universe.
Well, while we're talking about poor approach, let's talk about some low points.
The biggest low point in the movie for me, the villain design is as bad as the hero design is good. The Seven Deadly Sins are completely indistinguishable. Like, you can tell who Gluttony is because Gluttony's fat, and Lust, I guess, has a long tongue.
Yeah, Gluttony's got a big old mouth, but he looks a lot like Sloth, who is also fat.
Yeah.
So,
whereas if you look at, and again, even in the Geoff Johns, Gary Frank comics, like the Seven Deadly Sins, first of all, they're color coded, which is handy, but they also like take very evocative humanish forms. And if you go back even further to the way that Beck and Jerry Ordway drew what were then called the Seven Deadly Enemies of Man, because they're not the Seven Deadly Sins until John shows up, presumably because in the 40s it was a comic for babies. and like Lust did not enter the equation until JLA, JSA, Virtue and Vice, for those of you keeping track at home. Like they have these exaggerated features that are very evocative of what they are. These just look like the enemies from a Devil May Cry game. Like, there's one with wings. There's, like, one with four arms, who we were trying to figure out. I guess that's Grieg, because he can grab more stuff. But, like, who is Wrath? Who is Pride? Envy is very indistinct, which is weird considering that the climactic action scene hinges on Envy.
I don't think that the Seven Deadly Sins are particularly visually distinct or visually appealing. They're just kind of like gross goblin monsters.
They're not even toyetic in the way that the heroes are toyetic, because the fact that the Shazam family shows up was spoiled in the merchandising. You could go to, like, a week before the movie came out, you could go to the store and buy Darla if you wanted to. Oh, that's also another high point. I think all the kids were very good in the movie.
Yeah, I think the kids were pretty good. I feel like the kid who plays Freddy, I mean, it's not his fault because he's just got so much dialogue to say. But it's hard to not make Freddy kind of like an annoying, babbling kid.
He's a Gilmore.
Based on all he has to say. Yeah, he's saying Bendis dialogue is what he's doing.
Yeah, he's it's all patter.
I know that it's not his fault, but it's... If there's one issue with the script, I think that's it. How much Freddy talks.
From a character standpoint, I think the worst part is that Billy is inconsistent when the thing that should be connecting... Like, Billy needs to be the most consistent character, you know?
Well, it's something we talked about earlier. Billy, when he's Billy, is virtually an entirely different character from Shazam.
Yeah.
And, you know, you and I might disagree on this. I think Zachary Levi is miscast.
I don't. I think he does a really good job, and also his shoulders are sick.
I think that's padding. I don't think that's his actual body.
I am very curious. If anyone knows, please hit me up, because I want to know if Zachary Levi has shoulders that are that sick. I believe he could shoulder press a bus.
But like he's doing the childlike wonder thing and it works. But the kid who's playing Billy, the actor who's playing Billy, what is it?
Asher Angel.
Asher Angel. He's playing Billy as like world weary and, you know, kind of detached. And there are a couple moments where Shazam is like that. Like when he's talking to Mary about how the foster family isn't her real family, or how families don't actually help anybody. Or there's maybe one other scene where he's more like Billy, but for the most part, the parts where Shazam is in Shazam form, he's just kind of mirroring Freddy. It's just wide-eyed wonder at everything. But we never really see that side of Billy when he's Billy.
I think they tried to connect the character by having Asher Angel play older and Zachary Levi play younger, like to accentuate like Billy as an adult and Shazam as a child, and hope that they would kind of meet somewhere in the middle. But in practice, I feel like it's a little, it's disconnected. Like that character needs to be consistent from one actor to the next, which I will admit is difficult to pull off. But the movie like goes in a like, again, the approach, I think, to the character is wrong.
And I think Levi's approach to it is to like mug and play a kid. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's right. I mean, I think that's partially a script thing, because so much of the script is him being kind of amazed by everything. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I feel like you need an adult playing Shazam who is not so obviously a kid, you know? Because part of the comics thing is like Shazam looks like Fred McMurray. He looks like a dad, you know? Or Captain Marvel. Like, he's very adult-looking. And Zachary Levi strikes me as, like, a child in a man's body, like, already. Like, it's... I understand why he was cast, but I don't totally buy him in the role, if that makes sense. It's... That's a personal preference thing, I think, but...
I feel like the powers are, again, like very inconsistent, because Shazam the Wizard, what a confusing movie to talk about. Shazam the Wizard lists them off, and we obviously get Speed of Mercury, Power of Zeus is the lightning, Strength of Hercules, but all of the powers that cannot be represented visually are left out. There's definitely no Wisdom of Solomon. There's definitely no Courage of Achilles. Like, Billy spends a lot of time running away. And,
yeah,
even Freddy, when he gets his powers, the first thing he does is run away. And we were also left with the question of, does the family have, like, one power each, or one that's accentuated more than the others? Because we never see Darla flying, and we don't really see her using super strength. We see her moving very fast. We see Pedro being very strong, and we only see Eugene in his adult form. Like, he kind of only throws lightning around. So I was trying to figure out what that left Billy with, because when we see Darla running fast and Peter being strong, I'm like, oh, I guess Billy has the power of Zeus, which is very nebulous and kind of a catch-all. But then
I think Billy still has them all. I think Billy has them all, and then the rest of the family has one accentuated. I seem to remember that from the comics being a thing, but the movie doesn't really get into it, and I think it's fine that it doesn't. I think that would be a waste of time to just, like, explain it all in the movie.
Well, I just feel like it's very – he's Ham. He's Hercules, Atlas, and Mercury. Like, that's, yeah. You know? I guess he's Jam, because he has the lightning stuff, too. It's a weird inconsistency that bugs me more than anything else. But yeah, like, also a lot of the approach stuff, like, I don't like any of the scenes where Billy's being a jerk, because Billy's frequently a jerk in this movie. And I feel like it would have been possible to write him and portray him as like self-interested and like suspect, because, you know, he's a kid who's been kicked around by the system. But A, I think it goes on too long. Because it's a solid hour of learning that with great power comes great responsibility, and we have super villains to fight, kiddo. I don't think Billy's a bad character. I think there are parts of the approach to his character that I don't like, which I can't believe I'm talking myself into liking this movie.
One last low point is the way that the movie portrays Savannah, who honestly could be anybody. He could be any bad guy.
He like, I like the way Mark Strong plays him. Savannah has like no personality of his own.
He has no personality. He's a rich guy who takes over his dad's company to no real avail. And he's not smart. He's not a scientist. He's not a schemer. He's just a guy who has powers so he can punch Shazam.
He's a very, one instrument villain.
It's a waste of Dr. Savannah.
Like, he should have been, if they were going to play this character exactly the same way, because the only reason it's Savannah is because Savannah's the archenemy in the comics, but like, he's more like an IBAC, right?
It's trying to learn the lesson from Justice League of not having a nobody villain, but they kind of make Savannah into a nobody villain by changing him so much.
Yeah. Also, like, it's very weird that this movie, like, the villain of this movie is another guy who has all of Shazam's powers. Like, it's said at one point in the movie, he has all your powers, plus a bunch of vape demons. The vape demons are also pretty bad. And then, like, we know that Black Adam is going to eventually show up in something, and he's a bad guy who has all of Captain Marvel's powers. Like, he's a bad guy who has all of Shazam's powers. And if Captain Nazi shows up, he's a bad guy who has all of Shazam's powers.
All right, Chris, what are our final thoughts on 2019's Shazam?
I watched a Jenny Nicholson video a while ago, and she was making a point that I'm not sure that I agree with, but I found it very interesting, which was that she was talking about how the world of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies is a very nice world, like where people who are like mean to Peter Parker are kind of like cartoonishly mean to Peter Parker, and like everything seems like a little softer, you know? Like even when his uncle dies, like he just kind of lays down on the street and gives Peter like a final speech. He has plenty of time to deliver that. And I think that's interesting because, you know, Spider-Man as a character is so often defined by tragedy. The world that this takes place in is grim. And I feel like for a character like Shazam. And you know, like when we were watching, Aiden made the point that like, yeah, there's plenty of kids out there who come from abusive homes, and you know, this is a like could function as a power fantasy for them. If they're like, one of the first things that happens in this movie is John Glover calls young Dr. Savannah a little shit, you know? It's a very grim world. And I love a story about a found family. You know I do. You know I love a story about a found family, Matt.
Sure.
But like I said earlier, like the, for some reason, and I'm curious to know what you think about this, having Thomas and Martha Wayne gunned down in front of Batman, having, you know, Jor-El and Lara be exploded on Krypton seems way nicer than revealing that Billy Batson's mom chose to abandon him at a fair.
It's interesting to me that the movie has such a grim view of biological families. And I think it's something that's very specific to just these characters, but it really is. I don't know. It's, I don't think any of it's intentional, but it really is. It really does feel like a commentary on like your family doesn't have to be your family if you have an adoptive or found family that really cares about you.
It feels like a lot of this movie is defined in opposition. You know, like we know that Shazam, the hero, is a kid in an adult's body. Therefore, Billy needs to be an adult in the kid's body. We want this movie to be about how Billy's adoptive family becomes his true family. Therefore, we have to show that his biological family is bad. And I feel like you didn't necessarily need to do that. To tell what is, generally speaking, all of the found family stuff and the stuff about Billy kind of coming to accept the Vasquezes and the other foster kids is good stuff, I think. It plays really well, and there's like the really cute moment at the end. Like they always, you know, put their hands in and do like a not quite a prayer, but they talk about what they're thankful for. And they do it a couple times in the movie, and Billy sits it out. And then at the end, he like takes lead and talks about how he's thankful for his new family. That's really good, I think. But I don't think you needed, oh, by the way, Billy's mom, who herself came from a abusive home, abandoned him at the fair and is now living with Travis.
Look, you can keep the abandon him at the fair. You can keep the Billy realizes that his foster family is his real family. But you can make her a more sympathetic character. Yeah. You can make her a character that Billy doesn't have to write off entirely. When he shows her the keychain, she doesn't have to say, "What's that?" She could say, "Oh, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. Look, I just wasn't ready, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but like you're better off without me, or you're better off with people who can do more for you than I can." You know, like you could make her more of a human being and less of a like someone who clearly doesn't care about her son at all. You know,
I do feel like there is value in making Billy the character who does comes from a bad home life, you know, like a bad biological family home life, because I feel like that is a necessary power fantasy. Because that's one thing that a lot of heroes don't really have, that was kind of retroactively grafted onto a lot of heroes in the 90s and 2000s. Like Wally West got a bad family in the 90s. But it feels weird to do that in this movie. And I feel like there's either a way that you could have done it and had it not seem like the world outside of the Vasquez house is just a grim and bitter place, versus without necessarily taking away. Like, I don't even know if Billy's mom has to be sympathetic, but, and I also don't know why taking someone's parents away seems so much less harsh than like the parent abandoning them. I think there is value in those stories, but it's a hard one to get through sometimes.
Again, I feel like what we said at the beginning is my ultimate final thought about this movie. As an adaptation of 80 years of Captain Marvel, I don't know that this is the best movie to be that. As an adaptation of the last 8 years of Captain Marvel, of Shazam, this is about as good as they could do.
Yeah. And I feel like it definitely went into this movie with a chip on my shoulder. And again, I stand by C+ to B-. See me after class, you can do better. But the more I talk about it, and having actually watched it start to finish now, and honestly, having Aiden, who has zero connection to to Otto Binder and CC Beck's Captain Marvel Adventures, did provide a different perspective, and I kind of talked myself into liking it more.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for Movie Fighters. I think this is going to be kind of a marathon-length episode, so thanks for sticking with us. Turns out we had a lot to say about Shazam. We'll be back in September with another recent comic book-based movie. That was not a financial success or a critical success.
We should save it for October.
Okay, maybe we'll do it in October. But we'll be back in September with something else. And you should be here for it. You can follow us on Tumblr at moviefighterscast.tumblr.com. We mostly post snack situation stuff there now, but that is our Tumblr. You can email us at moviefighterscast@gmail.com if you have a suggestion for a movie or any of that kind of stuff. Chris, where can people find you online?
Everybody can find me at the-isb.com. That has links to everything, including my Amazon wish list. It's my birthday next week.
Chris's birthday is fast approaching. Please lavish him with gifts. You can find all my stuff at mattdwilson.net. That's where you can find links to my books, my comics, my other podcasts, and my social medias. See you all in September with another movie. Thanks for sticking with us as we talked about Shazam. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
This has been a Kaleidos Media production.